From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, squatters are a growing problem in Texas, taking over people's homes, destroying property and lives.
Magnitude of it, however, will be shocking to you when you see the stories of real people that have had to fight squatters in their own home.
Now the state is promising new, tougher anti-squatter laws. And the sound of San Antonio's history comes to life from antique music boxes at Villa Finale. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. A squatter is a person who has illegally settled on someone else's property. These people move in while the legitimate homeowner is away or while the house is vacant. It might seem that they are criminally trespassing or doing criminal mischief, but getting police to act on that and remove the squatter is next to impossible. This week, a Texas Senate committee heard testimony about the problem, and the senators are promising to pass a set of new laws that will crack down on squatters.
What we're here for, quite simply, is to come and take it back.
Senator Paul Bentoncourt, a Republican from Houston, made it clear in his hearing opening statement that the committee was on the side of the property owners and they had no sympathy or tolerance for squatters.
Because that's what we're going to do. We're going to get legislation put together that will come take these properties back from squatters who have no legal or moral or ownership or any other investment in a property except that they attempt to occupy it without legality.
Bentoncourt then introduced a montage of local television news reports with horror stories about the Texas squatter problem.
They are seeing an influx of squatters, or as they like to call them, trespassers.
Sometimes you can barely get through the door. There is so much stuff.
Constables say it's mainly the homeless who are entering vacant houses and setting up shops.
When the police were all here today and we saw that y'all were here to interview, there was a jubilation down on the next street when people were going, oh yeah, they're finally going to get them out.
But Houston police only towed away the trailer out front.
They just kind of showed up, and we're not sure how they got in.
Each story followed a pattern. A law-abiding, tax-paying homeowner is victimized by someone moving into their property, and they won't leave even after the police are called. And this is also the story of the hearing's star witness, Terry Boyette, a Mesquite resident who lost her home due to damage caused by a squatter.
It actually took 7 months from the date that I hired an attorney to get back into being able to evict because of the time it took to get a court date. And he was given an additional 30 days to appeal because it was the holidays and the judge didn't want him to be homeless, even though I was homeless. During this entire time, I paid utilities, property taxes, and for water and homeowners insurance, as well as my mortgage to try and save my home. Because it was considered tenant harassment, even though this person had never been a tenant and broken into my home, to turn off any of those things. In addition, I continued to maintain the home on the outside by doing maintenance and landscaping because Mesquite would find me if my grass got too long.
Boyette told the committee she lived in her home for over 2 years, but needed to spend several weeks in Florida for family matters, and that's when the squatter moved in. That was last June, and she is still unable to move back into her home.
In the time from the time he got the notice, the first notice to the court date, he used that time to sell my appliances, my furniture, large items. He left the water running when he ripped out the fridge and the washer and dryer, so I have water and mold damage in my house now. And then when he got the additional 30 days, he held a yard sale and got rid of all my personal items. Anything that wasn't sold is completely covered in filth and mold. Not to mention that he allowed other people to come into the house and use it as a drug den. So they've detected fentanyl, they've detected heroin, there's needles throughout the clothes and all the garbage that you see throughout there. There's molded and dirty food, all because I couldn't do anything.
Boyette said following the legal process to remove the squatter is not only slow, but it's out of balance. It sees the squatter as a tenant giving them rights over the rights of the property owner.
To date, he's out walking on the street, and I'm $150,000 in debt to replace everything in my home and repair it. He spent 2 days in jail for trespassing after kicking out a window the third time he returned to the house. The police were called out 5 times in the first 2 weeks because there were drug addicts continuing to break into the home because he told them he owned it and they could live there.
She told the committee that the police say squatter situations are civil matters and not criminal, so there's nothing they can do. Senator Royce West, a Democrat from Dallas, had a difficult time rectifying the inaction of law enforcement.
When I contacted a detective and he said, I don't know that there's been a crime committed. And I said, I need you to explain to me how a man can break into my home, absolutely destroy it, ruin me financially, and there has been no crime. No crime. It's absurd.
He broke into your house?
Yes.
And the police department said that wasn't burglary?
No. It's not burglary if I'm not living there. And because I was not there for those 2 weeks, I was in Florida.
It doesn't matter whether you're living there or not.
It does to the police, my father.
It makes no sense.
No, it makes no sense.
No sense at all. Now, I'm starting to get kind of outraged about that. And I want to know from the Mesquite Police Department what they don't understand about the statute concerning burglary of habitation in the state of Texas.
They said because nobody's living
there.
That's a
bunch of crap. Yeah. Okay.
Boyette said as a homeowner, she was on her own trying to figure out how to regain her property, but the squatters have plenty of free legal help and other public resources to help them evade the law.
When you go to court, clerk of the court stands up and says, here's all these free resources for tenants and people in the house, and we're going to have somebody waiting outside to help you. I, as a homeowner, nothing. I navigating, what do I do with the police? How do I get into court? You know, doing the eviction, dealing with insurance, which has been unbelievably stressful. And I have no idea what's coming, no idea what's going to happen. And I have nobody to answer or kind of say, hey, this is what you need to expect. This is what's going to happen. But as a homeowner, nobody helps you. Nobody tells you what to expect. Nobody gives you any guidance. But yet, if you're living in my house illegally, here's free help. And it's like 2 pages of advocates that they can contact.
Judith Matthews and Abram Mendez, a San Antonio married couple, testified that their squatter received a letter from the city of San Antonio with instructions and resources.
I just want to share with you our frightening experience. We never imagined that someone could take away from us a right to private property. It even seemed unrealistic when the squatter got more protection, help, and benefits than us, the lawful homeowners and taxpayers.
Matthews said the couple felt threatened by law enforcement during the process, that when they turned off the water and electricity to the home, they were ordered to turn the utilities back on or else they would be jailed.
Squatters know what they are doing. They know how to take advantage of obsolete laws. They move in, they get free rent. Like in our case, he was living in a property for free for over 3 months, even though we were lucky because we were able to get him out sooner than any other homeowners who, you know, spend 7 months to a year. If a homeowner is out of desperation and tries to remove the squatter on their own, the homeowner gets arrested, while the squatter is protected by the police and the laws.
The committee is looking to draft new laws for passage in the 2025 legislative session. It could be earlier if Governor Greg Abbott calls a special session with squatters on the call. The lawmakers said they will criminalize squatting, streamline the removal of squatters, and strengthen the rights of property owners. The legislators admit that they need to craft protections for property owners that don't overshadow the protections for legal tenants. Betancourt said that more hearings will be held on the issue, and he will be looking for answers as to why Texas cities won't enforce the laws that are already on the books.
So you can be happy to know that San Antonio will be highly invited to the next meeting.
The U.S. Energy Information Administration is predicting that LED lightings will provide up to 95% of U.S. commercial lighting needs by 2050. The Soft Lights Foundation is seeking to protect Americans from the harmful effects of these lights, including unregulated bright headlights in vehicles. Texas Public Radio's Kayla Padilla talked to one woman who experienced seizures when exposed to LED lights.
Jamie Treese is a 38-year-old living in Pennsylvania. She was taking her Zoom interview from her home, a place that has become her entire world after she started experiencing convulsions and seizures to LED lights a few years ago. She began noticing that car headlights seemed to be getting brighter on her 40-minute commute to work.
I started to get insane pain. I started to notice my teeth going numb, my nose going numb. And then I would be followed by blinding migraine pain. And so if you think about me driving into the office every day, this is happening every day, even during the daytime. I get to the office and then I'm sitting under LED lights, which are also causing reactions.
In the summer of 2023, Tree started experiencing convulsions. Then one day while she was doing work in her yard, Tree's neighbor pulled out of their garage with their LED beams on. As a result, she began experiencing her first full-blown seizure.
The work we were doing was actually even next to a bee's nest. And I remember thinking to myself after the lights hit me, "Don't fall, Jamie, don't fall. The bees are right there, don't fall." Yet I slumped over my shovel, I convulsed, and I was actually unable to get up off the ground for almost 30 minutes.
These seizures became more frequent, and she soon found herself covering her car windows with cardboard and other material to minimize exposure to these lights. Because of this, she got pulled over by police.
The police officer had insanely bright LED lights shining out of his car. In addition, the rapidly strobing light also coming from his car. And this was the first time that I actually really thought about, crap, I cannot call emergency services for help because all of them have LED lights.
So Tree sought out a medical team willing to perform some additional tests on her. When entering the hospital, Tree had to wear a thick jacket and use an umbrella to minimize her exposure to the hospital's LED lights. Tree borrowed a headlight casing from her mechanic with an LED bulb. When hooked up to an electroencephalogram, or EEG machine, the doctors turned on the light and Tree started seizing.
My heart rate jumped to 160. I convulsed. I had the blinking reflex. My muscles spasmed. I was unable to respond to stimuli, so I couldn't answer questions that they asked. I couldn't move certain parts of my body.
According to the Soft Lights Foundation, Jamie is likely the first person in the nation to be subjected to an experiment to determine if LED lights cause non-epileptic seizures in a controlled laboratory study. The doctors concluded that she was suffering from non-epileptic seizures and said with confidence that LEDs were her only trigger. Though Therese was once a healthy, able-bodied person, she now can't even step outside on her yard without fear of seizing.
I am completely segregated now from society. I have my blinds closed all the time during the day because if someone's LED streetlight turns on from their house, it will cause me to have a seizure. So I do not leave the house unless I must go to work. If I go to work, someone has to drive me, and that someone's usually my husband.
Therese can't even get her daughter on and off the bus and can't attend any of her school events. Sometimes her daughter, at age 6, helps her mom while she's having a seizure. Therese wants to spread awareness about her condition because she knows she's not alone in her experience. She has since joined a support group from people suffering similar issues.
Many of us can't even leave our homes, but we've been able to band together to try to hold the government accountable, to produce those regulations, to produce those safety standards, and to protect the American people, because that's what should be happening here.
Mark Baker is the founder and president of the Soft Lights Foundation. His organization is trying to get federal regulation for LED lights and is slowly gaining traction. Baker said that it is the responsibility of the Food and Drug Administration to regulate LED headlights, and currently there are no regulations in place.
So for LEDs, they have no regulations at all. So they haven't been tested, they haven't been approved, they haven't set any what's called performance standards.
On April 2nd, a Change.org petition to ban blinding headlights reached over 60,000 signatures. As a result, Baker sent a letter to U.S. Secretary of Transportation Pete Buttigieg, asking that he direct the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to take action.
Nobody likes these lights. Why can't we do something about it? And don't tell us it's misalignment, because that's not the problem. The problem is there's no limit on the intensity, and nobody vetted these things.
The National Highway Traffic Safety Administration responded to TPR's request for comment and said, quote, NHTSA has a safety standard for lamps, reflective devices, and associated equipment. The purpose of the standard is to reduce crashes and injuries by providing adequate illumination of the roadway and by enhancing the visibility of motor vehicles on public roads. According to Baker, he gets messages from people all across the country that are impacted by LED lights, whether it be as severe as Teresa's case or being unable to see when driving at night.
We need the Food and Drug Administration to regulate this, because if it's too intense and causing people to be stuck in their home and they can't leave their houses anymore, this is a catastrophic problem. And so this neurological problem is not talked about enough.
In a statement to TPR, the FDA said that, quote, the FDA has not published performance standards for LED headlights. Automakers do not have to petition or receive approval from FDA solely for the purpose of manufacturing vehicles with LED headlights. Baker encourages people to reach out to the Soft Lights Foundation and contact their members of Congress with their concerns. With limited research, and as LED light usage continues to grow, it's unclear if cases like Teresa's will become more common.
I'm a hardworking American who is just trying to go about my life as any other normal American would do.
Every aspect of Teresa's life has been impacted, and she hopes to one day be able to step outside of her house and take in the day without fear of putting her life in danger. I'm Kayla Padilla in San Antonio.
When someone serves their time in jail and a judge says they can leave, they should be able to go home. At least that's how it's supposed to work. Kate Urey's Marina Trejan Martinez reports that doesn't always happen in Dallas County and across Texas.
On any given day, thousands sit in Dallas County jail cells. Chris McDowell was one. He had shoplifted from a Lancaster Walmart. When he missed his probation appointment, it landed him right back in Loose Sterrett. Then one day last June, a judge said he'd served enough time. So he returned to the jail. Excited, he packed his things and asked a guard about release.
He got my name and stuff, and he told me, you're going to TDC. I said, excuse me?
The guard said he was headed to state prison. The county never sent him. They didn't send him home either. He stayed in jail 52 more anxious days. He lost his job, his truck, and 40 pounds. Exhausted, he pestered guards every day about his release. They threaten discipline and segregation, he says.
It's one thing to go in there and know you got to do an amount of time and know when you get out. It's another thing to know you're supposed to be out and not understand why they're not letting you go.
Dallas County recently paid McDowell $100,000 to settle a federal civil rights case. Dean Malone represents him.
Officially, Dallas County did not admit that it did anything wrong. However, we feel that the six-figure settlement for Mr. McDowell being held weeks after his release date in the Dallas County Jail speaks volumes.
3 weeks after KERA News first asked about settlements, Sheriff Marion Brown, District Attorney John Cruzo, and District Clerk Felicia Petrie had not yet responded. Dallas County Judge Clay Lewis Jenkins says computer system failures have caused major problems.
Anytime a person spends even one more day in jail than required by law is unacceptable. We have added additional temporary staff to work on this issue of ensuring that people get out of jail when they are supposed to.
A year ago, Dallas County implemented a new jail and court software called Odyssey. Many say the transition has been a financial, legal, and law enforcement disaster. Jail staff have been handwriting paperwork to process inmates. The county has spent more than $1 million so far trying to untangle the IT nightmare. Jenkins said the court recently demanded answers from Tyler Technologies, which the county hired to implement Odyssey.
And I'm hopeful that very soon the last of these problems will be resolved.
Dallas County paid another settlement, $60,000, to a man also jailed for months longer than he should have been. Lawyer Jim Spangler says the Odyssey transition is a mess, but sheriff department failures, not computer problems, kept his client, Ryan Harris, in jail.
not all issues involving release are the sheriff's fault. In Ryan Harris's case, it was very much the sheriff's fault.
A judge said last February that Harris had served his time for theft. When he wasn't released, he started calling every lawyer he'd heard about from other inmates. His wife did the same from home. Finally, they found Spangler.
I was just banging my head against the wall trying to get someone at the sheriff's department to handle this, and I couldn't get anything done.
Harris wasn't released until May. The state needed confirmation from the jail that he had served his time. Spangler says it never arrived.
People make mistakes. I know I'm busy. I forget to do stuff sometimes. But the fact that they have a system where someone can, like, overlook something and then they're just like, well, he could still be in jail. This whole thing is all extremely concerning.
Krishnaveni Gundu with the Texas Jail Project says it's impossible to measure how many people are held in jail after a judge says they can leave. But it happens a lot for a lot of reasons.
Big, small, doesn't matter. Computer systems that are new, manual systems, like, it doesn't matter. It's across the board.
She says similar lawsuits are pending throughout Texas, and until its software runs smoothly, Dallas County could face more settlements. I'm Marina Trahan Martinez in Dallas.
If you've never heard of the Future Problem Solving Program, you're not alone. This international nonprofit teaches students critical and creative thinking skills to help them design positive futures. And two teams from Sinton, Texas, are going to the international conference next month in Indiana. KEDT's Kathy Edwards has the story.
We are taking a charter bus, and we're going to drive 18 hours to go to Indiana, and the kids are so excited.
That's Corey Gandera, district literacy specialist for Sinton ISD. She's also mom to two contestants.
My son is on the middle school team. Their project is called SOS, Solving Our Stress. They found that an alarming number of teachers have been leaving education, and a lot of it has to do with stress. So they have created two different rooms. One of the rooms is specifically for staff members, and it's got, like, this really calming, cool environment.
Gandera says there's also a fourth and fifth grade team of problem solvers.
Those are our elementary students, and some of the things that were coming up were the kids were not using the right language for school, that they weren't being respectful, that they weren't comfortable talking to other students. And so they started a social skills squad, and they're learning how to speak to each other.
Corey Gandera says the club is making an impact on the lives of students at Sinton ISD.
There was a student that when he first started the social club, he didn't speak to anybody, and everyone kept trying to talk to him, and he was a little bit overwhelmed. But after coming to their social club for a couple of weeks, he's now interacting with other students appropriately, and he feels like he has friends.
I'm Kathy Edwards in Corpus Christi.
Before Spotify, the iPod, or even radio, if someone wanted to hear music on demand, there were a few options. One possibility of note were automatic music machines. And there is a remarkable collection of these antique tune-playing inventions that are part of San Antonio history. Just off of downtown San Antonio in the historic King William neighborhood is a house overflowing with history and antique music. It's Villa Finale, Italian for final home, and it's where San Antonio preservationist Walter Nold Mathis created a pocket of frozen time. The 1876 mansion is densely packed with an impressive assemblage of decorative fine art from centuries past. Off the main staircase is a wooden contraption the size of a closet.
This is a deluxe model Violano Virtuoso.
Sylvia Gonzalez-Pizana is the manager of collections and interpretation at Villa Finale.
It's a deluxe model because it has two violins in the front, and on the back is a full piano board.
This precursor to the jukebox used to jam at the legendary Albert Friedrich Buckhorn Saloon. But when Prohibition was enacted, the saloon was shut down and the music machine was bought by the Otto Kaler family of the Pearl Brewery.
They found out that Mathis had purchased this big house, Villa Finale, and they told him, hey, do you want this music box? And Mathis, who was an avid collector, said, of course I want this music box. Did he realize it was this big? Probably not.
The machines excite the eye as much as the ear. Behind the glass, there is a dance of brass levers, struts, and metal rods. The strings of the violin are played by a rotating baton operated by small motors. Different notes are achieved with metal tabs and electromagnets fingering the neck. The music is programmed on a paper roll, which automatically rewinds. Yet somehow the stories of the house itself are even more amazing than the rare music engine.
What's great about this machine, because I mentioned it came from the Buckhorn, it has a little tie-in to our site, Villa Finale. Billy Keelman, who was a direct competitor with the Buckhorn, he had another place called the Horn Palace.
In his teens, Kelman ran away to join Teddy Roosevelt's Rough Riders, who were mustering in San Antonio. After the war in Cuba, he came home and joined the San Antonio police. But in 1910, he quit the force, forged his father's name, and bought a brothel called the Beauty Saloon. Kelman became known as the King Pimp of San Antonio and ran the city's infamous red light district.
Well, Billy Keelman was almost murdered at the Horn Palace, and he had to sell the business. So what did he do? He moved here to Villa Finale in 1924. He purchased the property with his wife, second wife, who was a local madam. So Billy Keelman bootlegged liquor out of the basement of this house while his wife ran her business upstairs.
Villa Finale's front parlor is now more respectable. In the middle of the art-covered cream-colored walls and red curtains, Mathis placed a grand piano.
This is a 1921 Bechstein Velti reproducing piano. Get it going here. Hopefully this works fine. Yeah, there we go. Perfect.
As the Chopin waltz comes forth, the black and white keys are pressed as if a phantom piano player was performing. A mesmerizing sight, a mechanical ballet.
Sometimes what Mathis would do, he would just have the piano going while he was at home. He had the windows open. And sometimes people would walk down King William Street and they'd say, wow, that Walter Mathis can sure play the piano. But no, it was just this machine.
Upstairs, there's another musical mechanism, a wooden box the size of a home computer.
This has got to be my favorite piece in the entire house. This is a Victorian Swiss music box that plays Scottish songs and plays what they called Chinese bells. So that's a lot going on already.
With clockwork precision, two animated dolls dressed in red ancient Chinese royal court costumes raise tiny mallets to then strike silver bells to accompany the plucked teeth of a singing metal comb. Down the hall in Mathis's bedroom is another music box.
And this one's really special because it belonged to the Mathis family. One of Mathis's ancestors was John Smith, who was the last messenger to leave the Alamo.
Surrounding the glittering box is an array of vintage family photographs showing the multiple generations of a family that contributed one way or another to the love of music, art, and history, all contained in Villa Finale. In San Antonio, I'm David Martin Davis. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past episodes of Texas Matters on our website at tpr.org. You can download and subscribe to Texas Matters wherever you find cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.